Good evening, family. My name is Mike. I am a recovered alcoholic. I always like to say up front really quickly, my home group is a vision for you in Union. We're the only Thursday meeting in Union. We meet Thursday, at 7:30 in Union. I actually have a great speaker coming out this week for my anniversary. I got a guy coming from Queens. Please come on out. My sober date is October 1st, 2008. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor men and women who I expect to sponsor men and women if they're capable. And I by no means know the right way, the way to do this process. I'm merely here sharing with you my experience with this big book, how I take my sponsees through it. You can do whatever you want in Alcoholics Anonymous, but if you find that you're miserable in here, we have an answer to that. So there was one other thing I wanted to throw in there, and I forgot it, and that's fine. Oh, this is also not to replace your having an experience with the sponsor. This is an addition and maybe gain something new. And we're going to be moving into step four. You know, I know we've spent, 4 weeks now on the first three steps. But again, it's actually right on pace with how I do it. I said this in the beginning. The first time I meet with the sponsee, usually the next of Saturday, when I meet them, I say, let's get together Saturday, and we sit for 3.5 to 4 hours and read what we've read up to this point, and they leave writing. They leave writing what we're about to read, the first column of the fourth step. And hopefully they write it that night. You know, I really push for that. Because what I was up to when I was barking on my fourth step, let me do share this. I did a third step prayer with my sponsor, and I went home. And, I was really convinced that I was doing the fourth step in my head. Like, I was really thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, when I pick up the pen, it'll all just be there. And it'll all just flow onto the paper. Mm-hmm. And 3 months later, well, see, the problem with that is I really am looking at it. I really am looking at my character defects and why I drank. Like, that's why I drank. So that's all. I mean, this is the most dangerous part in my experience for this alcoholic. The most dangerous part of recovery is in the fourth step. So I need to blast through this. So 3 months into it, my sponsor says, do I need to set you a deadline? And I said, yes. And he said, you have 30 days from today. Meanwhile, I didn't even realize this is only the first column. So on day 30, I called him and I said, I haven't written anything. And he said to me, I want you to let your wife know to not make plans tomorrow. I'm going to come get you, and she's not going to see you tomorrow. So he came and got me at 8 a.m. He took the day off, and he took me to the intergroup office, and he sat with me all day while I wrote. And I said, we'll take you home when you're ready for bed. And when he took me home, he said, tell your wife not to expect you home tomorrow, not to make any plans. I'm going to come get you. And he showed up at my house at 8 a.m., and he took me to the intergroup office, and he sat with me until I was ready to go to bed. And I wrote. And then he took me home, and the same deal the third day. And this guy took 3 days off work to sit with me. About a third of the way into that third day, I finished my writing, and we did my fifth step. This is what this guy did for me. And what I was up to at that 4 months, I don't like to say everything because I'm being recorded, but I was stealing money from Alcoholics Anonymous. I was on intergroup. And I was, borrowing money out of, the meeting book basket without asking, and I intended to pay it back. But, you know, Bert and Ernie told me that's stealing. Borrowing without asking. I don't think it would have been approved that I borrow that money. I was now, embezzling thousands of dollars from my family, telling them I need money for amends and this and that. And now because I have, you know, this overrated time in AA, everybody thinks I'm doing great. Meanwhile, I'm lashing out at my wife, you know, and I'm being a total jerk. I'm stealing. And I'm spending it on nonsense, really treating my alcoholism with shopping. The $600 shopping spree treats my alcoholism well. There's a feeling I get from that. So, it says, next we launched, and I really hammered that home, launched. Not meandered, not dilly-dallied. We launched out on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision, right, this third step decision, I decided to turn my will and my life over to God, which I'm going to experience isn't really any decision at all until I follow it up by action. This decision for me is consummated by the action that comes in 4 through 9. Other than that, I've just had an idea again. It's just like every time I said I'm going to stop drinking, and I don't do anything, and then I'm drinking. So there really was no decision until I picked up the pen. So though this decision was a vital and crucial step, I talked about this last week, necessary for life is how I read that. This next step is necessary for life for me. If I look at a plant, what's vital to a plant? Food, water, sun. This is as important for me. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. And we've spent so much time talking about how I'm blocked off by self. Right? I'm run on self-propulsion, self, driven by fear and ego, and trying to manage everything. And that's kept me blocked off. Our liquor was but a symptom. I should be convinced of this by now. Alcohol was not the problem. I've shared this over and over. I thought if I could stop drinking, I'd be okay. It never occurred to me I needed to get okay so that I could stop drinking. Now, I was always trying to treat symptoms, outside stuff, never the problem. The problem for me is what's going on with me before I pick up alcohol again. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke, right? I mean, anybody worked in retail, a restaurant? Especially like a restaurant. You're not taking inventory and getting rid of old goods, so you're just not going to do anything. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. And this is how I looked at this, fact-finding and fact-facing. Now, I worked in restaurants, but you could take it to a grocery store. You know, if you're in a grocery store and you got this cans of tuna that have been up there for 2 years and nobody's buying them, do you keep them on the shelf or do you put this hot new item that's just selling out every time you put it up and you can't keep enough of it stocked? You get rid of that tuna and you put the hot item up there. You stop fooling yourself about what's no good. And this is what I was about to do with myself. I was really about to do a fact-finding, fact-facing. Okay, no boogeyman in this step. I'm about to look at the truth about myself so that I can be rid of the stuff that's no good to me. And hopefully God's going to enhance that which is useful. I mean, it's really this simple. And that still sounds complicated to me. The beauty of this step is it's broken down into four parts that are broken down into four parts. That still sounds like, how can you inventory my whole great self in 16 parts? But it is that simple. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object to is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods. That's sort of what I just talked about. To get rid of them promptly and without regret. Holding on to my old ideas keeps me drunk. And this is not easy. We talked about this in the third step. To let go of some of the stuff that I've spent many hours and months and years, these cases I've been building against whatever. I talked about a lot when in the second step too, you know, how I built these cases against the word God. You know, I put tons of energy into that and to let go of that. You know, I also share this, I think, here, you know, I was really convinced that my thinking was what kept me alive for many years in prison. But my thinking's really what got me there. You know? If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. And it's funny, I actually had an experience with Chad here one time when we talked about values, and it gave me this whole... I have a new experience every time I take somebody through this book. And I really became aware of how skewed my value of things was. My value of everything was just completely skewed. And I don't want to dig into the whole experience we had, but... even to this day, I put so much value on certain things that really have no value. You know, I do. And this is where I'm going to start to become aware of this. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. Honestly being the operative word here. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which cause our failure. And I am convinced that it's my failure. You know? Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. So let me cycle back with that. So first thing I'm going to do is look for the flaws in my makeup. I'm inviting God in. I invite God in. I do a similar set-aside prayer. Every time we sit down, we invite God in. So with God invited in and another human, Tamir, I'm going to search out the flaws in my makeup. And being convinced that these flaws, as they come to life, as they are acted out in my life, are what defeated me. I'm going to now hopefully come up with what they are. I want to share this too because, you know, I've talked about the different ways I've done this. When I went through this process the second time, you know, many of you have been here since the beginning. The second time I went through this process was with a guy who was taken through the steps by a guy who was taken through the steps by Bill Wilson before there was a big book. And these two steps, 4 and 5, were really 23 questions. And what we're really trying to do in 4 and 5 is extract character defects, right? So that I can become willing to have God remove them and then ask him to remove them. And I talk to guys who, you know, tell me 40 years ago, a lot of 4th steps were written on like a diner napkin or a business card. And, you know, I don't do it that quickly. I like to be a little more thorough than that, because if I've got, like, how many things can I fit on a business card? Maybe 15? I'm not really getting clear patterns with that. So the other side of the scale, and I know people with experience with this, you know, there's groups that are doing like resentments. They're writing a full page instead of a 4th column. And that takes a lot of time. But what I'm finding in those people is the level of maturity when they're done with their 4th step is bananas. Like, I'm so impressed with the level of maturity. So there's no wrong or right way to do this, but not doing it, but hiding, but not being honest. You know, what I'm really trying to get to here is my patterns and the things that are holding me back, the stuff that's killing me, my character defects that are absolutely killing me, the stuff that I don't want to talk about is what I need to talk about. I could write 1,000 things on my 4th step, but there's the one I don't want to talk about. And I'm really good at, like, I can drop some stuff on you that sounds like I'm really getting deep and dark. I can, and you really think I'm getting honest with you, and it's all a decoy, because there's something over here that I'm not talking about. You know, it may all be true, but I'm way over that. Like, this is the thing that I'm afraid of. This is the thing I'm trying to get to in this step. Resentment is the number one offender. Anger, my sponsor like to describe resentment as, like, you know, if you ever watch a football game and the guy gets injured and, you know, they replay it. Like, his knee gets blown out and looks painful, right? And then what do? They replay it, right? And they go back and then they zoom in on it and they replay it, right? And then they slow it down and zoom in on it from another angle and replay it. And this is what I do with anger. Mm. You know, the dude who I hate with everything that I am is at Disneyland eating cotton candy, you know? He just has no thoughts of me, and he's happy as could be. Meanwhile, this stuff kills me. And it tells me here, this is the number one offender, which for me later on is going to be more useful. Because right now, again, if where I'm at in this process, reading this with my sponsor or my sponsee, like, we're fresh off first step understanding, right? I mean, we've just spent 3.5-4 hours, and I'm going home and ready to write. I am convinced I'm an alcoholic, and I'm totally screwed, unless I have this spiritual awakening. But what happens for me later on, as resentment crops up, and I think I'm okay. I'm sitting in a meeting shooting darts at someone. You know, oh, this guy's sharing again. That's the number one thing that kills me. And for me, it's actually the little ones today. The little stuff that I think I'm okay. Meanwhile, I hate like 4 or 5 people in one meeting. And that stuff is compounding. It's somewhere in the back of me. It eats me up. And it always manifests later. Number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. This is truth for me. And again, this applies more later on. As I continue to go through recovery, this starts to take on deeper meaning to me. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been, I don't know why, I feel like I'm talking really fast. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. That makes sense to me. Like, so the physical's gone as soon as, like, I get detoxed, right? And when I get out of detox, I'm still thinking about drinking again. So that's the mental obsession for me. And I have the mental obsession because of the spiritual malady. I'm obsessed with the only thing that works to overcome my spiritual malady. So if I overcome the spiritual malady, then I don't have this mental obsession for the old solution that doesn't actually work for me anymore. And then physical is never a problem. So this has promised me that if I do this process fully, honestly, give my everything to it, and I straighten out spiritually, all my other problems are going to be solved. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. On paper. Again, I'm doing it in my head, right? No wonder I'm sick. There's something about paper. And I will share with you this. There's certain secrets, like, that I really thought, like, God didn't know. Or that they're not really real. Like, I can convince myself that something didn't really happen. You know, I mean, there's stuff, and you know, usually my experience is it's usually around sex, but not always. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff, secrets I have, and I like to act like they didn't exist. Like, my mind will think of it, and it just gets plugged away, and I don't think about it again for 4 years. Mm. But there's something about putting it on paper for me that it becomes real. And by letting it become real and really owning it in five, by really embracing the darkness of stuff, is when I'm able to actually let it go. And we'll talk more about that when I get here. But there's a lot to be said about paper, pen on paper, and even today. I can't figure this stuff out in my head. Like, even with God, I still need humans, I still need paper, I still need more. I don't always know when it's God talking to me in my head. I have to run it by other people. I have to put stuff down on paper. Now, my voice lies to me in amazing ways. It's very cunning. My disease lies to me in my voice, and it's cunning. Convincing. So we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, and principles with whom we were angry. I mean, this is that simple. This is the first column. This is where I stop. After we spent 3.5-4 hours, we read this, and I send them home to write. We list people, institutions, or principles. Now, I talk a little bit more about that. You know, I also know people that do blocks of time and they do, like, every resentment they've ever had. And if that works for you, that's fine. In fact, it's fantastic. More is often better in here. You know, if you got something you're not sure if it goes on here, put it on here. More is better. What I do find a lot of times is guys they lose resentments as they're writing this. I mean, you know, 60-70% of the way through, they're seeing the same thing 10 times, and they're laughing at themselves, and they're not angry at the person anymore. You know, erring on the side of writing, it's probably good. They don't always want to write it. They're like, I'm not mad at this person anymore. That's fine. You know, and again, I am about thorough with this. But I don't think I need to write down every person I was ever angry at. I'm trying to get to solution here. I'm not trying to stay in the four step. But I'm also not trying to cut corners. What I need to see here is patterns, and I need to get down on paper the stuff that I want to evade, the stuff that I don't want to talk about, the stuff that I'm hiding. This is what I'm looking for. And so I talk about people. That's pretty easy. Oh, man, I'm mad at people. And institutions. I hated the police, the government, all those sort of things. Mm. Institutions. For me, it was police and the government and the judges. And principles. And I have two different experiences with principles. So there's sort of, it means two things to me. The first thing, principles, is like sayings. You know, I have an issue with the principle of men with the men, women with the women. I don't really resent it anymore. I understand that there's people who've been hurt, and that's their issue, and they have a right to that. But when I first got here, I did. And you know, my network, we've always been close with women. We've sponsored women. We have women friends. Somebody in AA sponsored the first woman, you know. That all aside, I'm not here to defend that. I don't care. But, like, that's a good suggestion. You know, these a lot of people in their 70s and 80s who tell me, I can't stay home and raise my kids. I need to go to work. That's a principle that I resented. No, I don't. I don't have to. I don't. You know, it works better in my life that I stay home with my children. So these are principles and I need to start to look at, because the truth is, when I get here, I resent a whole lot of principles. You know, and I need to dig into that. I need to look at, you know, everything I'm angry at. The other side that I like to look at in principles is these self-defeating ideas about myself. These self-defeating attitudes. I didn't write myself down in resentments. I didn't resent myself. At this point, I thought I was a shit. I just couldn't stop drinking, you know. I mean, there's more to it at this point. But what I did resent was some of my self-defeating attitudes. And I was really mad at myself for hating myself at times. Mm. I was really mad at myself for not thinking that I could do certain things, if that makes sense. I don't know if I contradicted myself in there, but it makes sense in my head. Self-defeating attitudes. I'm not good enough. I can't do it. I'm not worthy. Mm. I resented when I had those thoughts about myself. I didn't truly resent myself. Does that make any sense? Hopefully. And we list these on paper. And generally how I do this with sponsees, as soon as the writing is done, I'm available the next day, if not that night. And it's an understanding. My God bless my wife. She's not one of us, but she gets the importance of what I do. You know, we have certain nights. Like, Wednesday is my wife's night. That is my wife's night 10 years from now. If my wife wants to do something on a Wednesday, she can write it on the calendar. She doesn't have to ask me, because that's our night. So, you know, my sponsees know, you have a network, because you're not going to get me on Wednesday. If it's critical, if you call me twice, I'll know it's something critical and I'll answer. But Wednesday is my wife's night. But there's an exception in this. If I need to get together with a sponsee to write the next column, you will not be waiting on me. And I had this happen with a guy. He finished his four-step and I was leaving for California. And he sat for 3 weeks on his four-step, waiting to do a fifth-step, waiting for me. He was fine. He actually still went through the entire process in 71 days. But I was really uncomfortable having a good time in California knowing this guy's sitting in his four-step, you know? It was really uncomfortable for me. And where I've grown with this process now, I love my network in Jersey. I've never had a network like this. We all sponsor each other. And I think, you know, Chad's taken some of my sponsees through 1, 2, and 3 for me. I've taken his sponsees through 1, 2, and 3, and that's his sponsee. But many of us, we do this. We work together. If I got to go to California for 3 weeks, you know, hopefully one of my sponsees who's on that fifth step is comfortable with one of their sponsee brothers to share a fifth step with them. I am about getting through this process and getting to page 88. I mean, this is what I'm about with this deal. Let's get you to page 88. And within a 7-day period, once the four step is done, I'm available for a fifth step. My fifth steps take anywhere from 2 to 10 hours. Usually they're 6 to 8. But I'll take my kids to daycare. You know, I'll whatever I got to do, my wife will pick up a slack. My wife will take a PTO day. But I make myself available. So I'm getting ahead again. When this column is done, often it's that night. And there have been times, too, where, you know, I'll read the second column, which we're about to read, over the phone. And here's the second column, why we were angry. That's the second column. I try to do this face-to-face. You know, I prefer to sit down and read this book with people. This is a human process, you know. I mean, honestly, you could tell everything about my recovery today by my relationships. You know, ask my 6-year-old how Daddy's really doing. I'll tell you I'm doing great. Ask my 6-year-old. She spends more time with me than anyone else, you know. And my wife is still in Enable. She'll tell you I'm doing great. Unless you're my sponsor. She doesn't know to tell him the truth. But it's why we were angry. So in this second column, and you know, I do really like the worksheets. There are worksheets out there, and I do think they're fantastic. It's just not how I was taken through. And so I do, you know, I do good old binder paper. Get a nice journal. I actually had a guy, he had a journal with butterflies on it. And like, I think it was the one I like gave him. I had one, and he ended up getting a butterfly tattoo because it was that journal. And I'm like, mine actually has pansies on it. And I'm like, I just can't get pansies. But often it's binder paper. And I sort of tell them first column, try and keep, you could probably keep the names inside that pink column. Mm-hmm. And the second column will take up about a quarter of the page. I try and show them with my four step how much. For me, this is cliff notes. We absolutely want to write this. But the why we were mad, I keep it in 8 to 12 words. You'll tell me the whole story. Get it on paper. You know, write something on, you know, what you're mad about. You know, get a little freedom from that if you need to. But you don't need to write the whole entire story here. In this second column, and the are like just so unnecessary, if that makes sense. Again, I'm about being efficient. We can get rid of and the. You know, why are you angry at this person? Stole from me. You know, and I'm giving them examples at this point. You know, we've also talked a lot in this whole process about my resentments. You know, and as I've gotten to know this person, or as I'm getting to know them, you know, I'm dropping my big secrets on them. You know, my stuff, my four things that I was never going to tell anybody. There's probably 100 people that know it now. It just has no power over me. I don't tell everybody. Because it's not everybody's business. I'm also careful what I talk about in a meeting. I've seen somebody go to jail over something he shared in a meeting, and should that happen either? No, but we see all kinds of stuff in here, don't we? Mm-hmm. So this is why we were angry. And again, it's we do want to get to why we're angry. We do want to get it on paper. There is value to writing this on paper. So who we're mad at, why we were angry. And, you know, I don't know why it's so hard initially to pick up the pen, but these are really two easy columns, you know? So then we've listened. Okay, so we asked ourselves why we're angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. And for me, this is the third column. And there's a lot of ways to do this. And, you know, I I'm starting to look into, you know, people actually like to write the word pride or whatnot. But what I do is five little rows and we do checklist. If you don't like that, you're really going to hate me when we get to suspicion, bitterness, or jealousy, because I just do SBJ. I do. And again, I'm not about cutting corners in this. What I'm about is this is what works for me and a lot of people. So now there's this column with five. And now I'm going to start looking at why am I really angry? What is affected in me? So I'm starting to, if this makes sense, like really break it down. Like all I know is that I'm mad at what they did. But I need to start looking at what in me gets affected over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And so these five columns, that they're going to put a check mark in for me. They look like, you know, I usually write pride for self-esteem, pocketbook, money. And I tie ambitions in with it. And I write one for security, physical security, personal relationships, and sex. So where am I affected in these? And some of them I'm affected in all. You know, it's funny how I start to see that, like, my sex relations, I'm married, and my sex relations are affected by other people in my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, like somebody says something to me in front of a pretty girl. And when I really get honest with myself, I think that affects my sex relations. Right? I mean, I'm married and I'm not doing anything, but I start to see where these delusions come about. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm also starting to see here the things that I worship in life. I worship my pride. I worship what you think of me. And one of the most important things, even today, is what you think of me. Mm. You know, money. Again, especially at this stage, my security and my relationships. I worship these things. And I start to become aware of that. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Okay, so was it our self-esteem, pride, security, ambitions, personal sex relations? Okay, so that's, yeah. Which have been interfered with. We were usually as definite as this example. And here it's got first column, second column, right? So resentful at Mrs. Brown. This is a good example. His attention to my wife. Like, that's fairly efficient. I would have probably just wrote attention to my wife. Or paid attention to my wife. I don't know. Like, I'm all about efficient. Told my wife of my mistress. Told on me to wife. Just shorter, fast. She's a nut. She snubbed me. Yeah, okay. So then affects my sex relations, sex, self-esteem, fear. And this is something I've actually recently started doing, is looking at, see in the parentheses, the fear. Looking at each of these and seeing what fear is involved. Is there fear involved? And it's, I find it interesting that he's only got a fear on a few of them here, because for me it was all fear. Mm-hmm. However, under each resentment there is fear. Make sense? And this is going to help me with my fear inventory. So we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thorough and honest. That's kind of important. It's nothing counted but thorough and honest. The only thing that counts here is that I be thorough and honest. If I miss something on accident, I generally forget something, that's okay. I forgot stuff. And it comes up later. I was looking at someone's tattoos one day and I was like, and it just hit me out of nowhere. There's a tattoo artist I owe amends to. It's when I start getting into the realm of, like, I'm going to say I forgot. Like, you just don't get what we're doing, you know? Nothing counts but thorough and honest, searching and fearless. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that the world and its people were often quite wrong, right? That's easy to see where other people are wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Right? And back to what I said earlier, I'm mad at people. Meanwhile, they're at Disneyland eating cotton candy. And I'm sitting here mad, drinking poison, getting drunk over it, killing myself. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. And we talked a lot about this earlier, right? I'm trying to make things happen, trying to make it better, trying to fix, and it just seems to get worse. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these. That's exact wording. Do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? Mm. To the precise extent. So if I spend 3 hours, 23 seconds, 23 and 8 tenths of a second, like precisely, that time is wasted. That is exactly how much time I've just wasted. I don't have room. And in fact, this resentment is the number one killer. So it's actually incredibly counterproductive to me. To the precise extent that I permit these, do I squander the hours? That I might have been worthwhile. And we've talked about that from the beginning. The end result of this whole thing is usefulness to God and others. Mm. So I'm completely wasting my time and in fact killing myself when I'm sitting in resentment. Mm. But in the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. Restated. Maintenance and growth. We found that it is fatal. Man, he's using powerful words here. Mm. God bless you.
Thank you.
For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Higher power. The insanity of alcohol returns. What's the insanity of alcohol? What goes on me right before I drink? And we drink again. I love the wording of this book. And with us, to drink is to die. I don't know about you, but I believe that. I don't know if I have another recovery in me. I'm just not willing to. I don't know. My ego's not letting me come back and say I got one day. You know? Prove all those haters right. Whatever. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. That's a strong condition. If we were to live. If Mike is to live, he's going to have to be free of anger. Now, that sounds really difficult. But what this book has taught me up to this point is it's always got how. It always tells me how I'm going to do that. Right? Precisely how. Ooh, just lost my spot. Okay. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. You know, we talk a lot about justifiable anger. It's something I don't have room for. I don't know what that is. You know? Like, I just don't have room for the anger part of it. Now, people will do me wrong, and I got to sort through it. The truth is, I've done that stuff more often than not, more than it'll ever be done to me. So anyways, we turn back to the list. For it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Uh-oh. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us, right? Mm. And again, I can find that in the third column. Like, easy to see who and why I'm mad, but now I'm starting to see, like, people just dominated me. Mm. I'm so afraid, and everybody affects my sense of security, my sense of pride. Mm. You know, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my money, I'm not going to be safe, etc. The world dominates me. You know, and I'm a tough guy, I don't want to see that. But it's the truth. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. Fancied or real. And I experience this more now, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's more now, but quite often, like the wrong that others do to me, fancy, like imagined. You know, so many people share in the meetings about me, I swear. And it's just not true. You know how many people I think don't like me in AA? And I actually go to these people and I ask, like, have I done anything? And I've had people say, dude, you're like one of my favorite, you know, and yeah. So anyways, and the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real. And, not, I don't know. There's more I want to say on this. I don't really know how to word it. Like, even on the road, you know, I'm driving, and I still go back to that, like, he cut me off, you know, or it rained on me stuff. It's just not the truth. You know, the guy's driving, and whatever he's doing, like, it's not something done to me. It's just something done, and I don't have room for that. My thing in the car, my mantra now is just God's child. Like, that takes me out of it now. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Right? That guy who I was mad at, and I don't want to get into all the details and take up a bunch of time, but that guy that I was mad at for like 20 years, what a waste of time. And I clearly couldn't wish it away. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the feeling. but I stayed in it. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. So, again, I'm in the car. A guy cuts me off. I'm just like one of God's children. I don't know what's going on with him. None of my business. Now, I also don't get to start diagnosing people who's sick, because that's ego. If I start ranking people, I'm ranking them all below me. Though we did not like the symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. And my sponsor starts to point out to me, like, would you someday like to be forgiven for everything you've done? Yeah. Is it possible that the key to that is forgiveness? You know, because I don't know about you, but I got 23 pages of harms. You know? We asked, not demanded, not told, we asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And again, I said we asked God. Because I'm not capable of this. This is not me. You want to do something really cool for people? Like, you're really fantastic. I'm like, no, I'm really actually a piece of crap. Like, that's God working. You know, I don't always say that, but that's where I am. I'm not that fantastic. God works in my life. I don't act on my every sick thought. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And this is a prayer. I don't know what they call this. Maybe it's a four-step prayer. This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? Actually, tie this into the 10th step, so I don't know what to call it. God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And if I can carry this attitude when a person offended, treating them with patience, like I would gleefully treat a sick friend, in my every transaction, my interaction with people, my life goes pretty fantastic. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. Right? If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds, and this is where we're taking that, looking at things from an entirely different angle. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. And this is our fourth column. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. This is not an easy task, especially for people who have been victimized in their lives. And I don't want to go too much into that because I don't want to bring up old stuff for people. But often, what I have to look at for me is my role in the current resentment. Why am I still angry about things? And what I'm looking back at for me, you know, I'm finding words like hypocrite. You know, I generally tell sponsees, here's what I want you to look for. Have you ever done this to someone else? Whatever you're mad at somebody for doing. For me, most of the time, I had done that far more than it would ever be done to me. But how dare you do that to me? Right? Was I intolerant? And did people have a right to just feel how they felt? But they disagreed with me. Hey, come on. Who am I? Judgmental? Was I judgmental? I have all kinds of crazy tendencies in this area. Judgmental. I judge everybody. I'm drawing a blank on my fourth step on me. Tolerance. Anyways, there's about seven or eight of them that I come up with. I'll bring it next week. I usually have my fourth step. But the key ones that I have people look out for. Oh, unreasonable expectations. I remember a guy was supposed to come pick me up for a ride to a meeting, and I was speaking. And I was going to be late. Like, they were really late. And I was just so mad, and I'm getting on the phone ranting. And, you know, finally, one of my friends from Intergroup, she says to me, Mike, were you ever late for somebody who was really counting on you? Mm. I'm like, oh, yeah, a lot. In fact, I probably just didn't show up. Because if I'm going to be late, I don't feel like talking to you about it and explaining. I'm just not showing up. Mm. You know, it's not the end of the world. But I place unreasonable expectations on everybody. And again, we go back to these mental contracts, these little plans and designs. Mm. You're always bumming cigarettes for me, and when I need a cigarette, I can't have one. Mm. You know, or whatever it is. I do something for you 3 or 4 times, now you owe me. I expect you to be there when I call on you. You know, I had all these nonsensical codes, having been in jail. You know, guy codes. I was buying into BS. You know, stuff that really wasn't getting me anywhere. So again, this is a touchy subject, and I don't want to dig too much into like certain areas of this. But often those are what I generally look for. And then also sometimes I just have to see in the ones where I really was victimized or hurt. What is my role in the current resentment? You know, 10, 20 years later, in my mind, I'm still killing this person, but I'm really killing myself over it. You know, my inability to face and deal with certain things. Yeah, that's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to touch much farther on that. But as I'm doing this fourth column, again, you know, 3/4 of the way down, it's the same stuff over and over and over and over and over and over and over. I hated hypocrites, and I'm the biggest hypocrite I ever knew. Hmm. I'm the biggest hypocrite I ever knew. I judged everybody. But you know, here's another one. How dare he tell my wife I was cheating on her? It's actually not my wife, ex-girlfriend. I'm saying wife because I'm married now for 11 years. But like all my girlfriends, I always cheated on my girlfriends. And how dare he tell my girlfriend I cheated on her? Dude, you actually did that. Like how dare people tell someone what I actually did? You know? How dare they? You actually did it. Like, get over it. You know, I trust somebody who drinks and gets high every day with $20 and then, you know, I'm mad at them because I didn't get it back and they disappeared. That's what alcoholics and addicts do. That's what I did. All right, so notice that the word fear is bracketed along the side the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. And this is sort of the first column. I start writing what am I afraid of, right? And for me, it started out with, like, heights. I'm afraid of heights, you know? So not the fear we're looking for. But there is some underlying fears in there. And, you know, a common thread that I seem to find with many of alcoholics is, like, I was afraid of, like, if I died today, what's my legacy? Would anybody care? Would anybody be at my funeral? You know? I didn't have a lot. I had about 12 of them, and it really broke down into about 4, which I can actually break down into 2 or 3. I mean, there's so many ways to break this down, but I have to, like, I like to draw sort of a diagram on paper when I do this with sponsees, but I'll put, like, 4 dots. I mean, I have more than that, but I'll put 4 dots, and what I need to do is take those 4 dots and blow them out into about 35 or 40 dots so that I can bring it back down to 2 dots. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. So I need to look at these surface fears, see all its manifestations, because that second column seems to show up everywhere. It's common themes, common themes, common themes. And then when I bring that down, it really comes down to I'm afraid of me and I'm afraid of you. Mm-hmm. Those are my fears. I'm afraid of me and I'm afraid of you. And I can argue this all day. I can talk about, well, also the unknown. But I can also argue that the unknown is fear of self or fear of you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I'm getting ahead of that. I don't do that always with sponsees. But what I do is I start by writing. And I'll explain to you why I do it this way. So we write down everything I'm afraid of. You know, I was afraid of myself. I was afraid of relapse. I was afraid of my brother dying, et cetera, et cetera. So then what happens is I start writing a second column. My sponsor tells me, well, we'll read it here. You know, what am I afraid of? We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment with them. Second column, we asked ourselves why we had them. Why do I have these fears? So, fear of heights. And here's what I did. Here's where I got caught up in like this infinity symbol. So, like, literally, Fear Heights was my first one. Why is that scary to me? Fear Heights. Well, I could die. Well, now I want to put fear of dying over on this column. Right? Or I could die, not die and get hurt. Fear of pain. And this is what I started doing, is taking this whole second column and putting it over in my first column. And my sponsor's, no. Like, your first column is just going to stay there. If later on down the road, after we've done this entire fear inventory, and you have an awareness of what we're doing, then you have a first column fear, then you write it. You know, and what I've experienced in later fear inventories, it's always the same exact fears. They just go hybrid and they manifest. I mean, they evolve on me. They go hybrid and they manifest other ways. It's always the same fears. And so then I start breaking down again. Why am I afraid? And so I started to get into some freedom in this, and I don't remember exactly where it came out, but in fear of self, somehow stuff with my mom came out, and I don't know why it came out here, but there was a lot of freedom, anger than freedom, and this realization that I was exactly like my mom. And that I was afraid of that. I was afraid of being exactly like my mom, but I was exactly like my mom. And I don't know if it makes sense, but there was a lot of freedom in that. And not in a blaming way either. And I don't know why I'm talking about that here. But why I'm afraid. You know, so again, dying alone. I start bringing stuff over a second column. Like, nobody likes me. It's dark. Etc. And then in the third column, went weird there. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? So in this third column, my sponsor had me. Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And so what my sponsor had me do here was start to see how self-reliance had failed me. And he had me write, there's four of them that he had me write, like, what part of self fail? Self-reliance, self-love, self-esteem, and self-confidence. Mm-hmm. And where did I fail on these? And what I start to see is that self always lets me down. Like, whenever I let myself down, it's again because this self-propulsion, self, always relying on self, always trying to make things happen, always trying to manage. And what we did at this point, too, was we sort of came up with these core fears. And for me, it was, there was like five of them, being alone. You know, again, today I break them down into you and me. I'm afraid of you and I'm afraid of me. Mm-hmm. But it was afraid of being alone, afraid of the unknown, afraid of you, afraid of me. Yeah, that was pretty much it. And but then again, it always breaks down to you and me. This sounds crazy and confusing, right? No? Okay.
Not today.
All right. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? That's kind of cool. That's sort of the opposite of how much, precisely the amount of time I spend in resentment is time wasted. Here it says, just to the extent that we do as He would have us and rely on Him humbly, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. So however much chaos I have going on in my life, if I rely on God, exactly the amount that I rely on God is exactly how much peace I'll find. We never apologize to anyone for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. And here's the fear prayer. So here's another four-step prayer, right? We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. Promise. At once we commence to outgrow fear. So the fourth column for me now looks like I've come up with these core fears. And I ask God, in this fourth column, it's sort of a checklist, I write out and I say this prayer. God, please remove this fear of self and direct my attention to what You would have me be. And I'm doing this every day for a while. You know, whatever fear comes up, whatever fear crops up, God, please remove this fear of blank and direct my attention to what you would have me be. I mean, this is my recovery in a nutshell, right? God, please remove. Show me who to help. Right? Less me, more you. That's good stuff for me. And, we'll move into sex and harms next week, I guess. I don't know, I was all over the place tonight with that. I don't know. I'm finding that I rely on my four-step book for that part.